So I think if you ask me about the roles of creativity and creative agencies, I think that's becoming fundamentally more important than ever in the world of AI. We have a whole course at Pratt that is called the Human-AI Relationship. And one of the things we're teaching about there is the whole notion of thinking methods and how to think differently. So we talk a lot about moving from design thinking to thinking design, right? And that notion of having different methods. So I think creativity and creative agencies, we will probably see more of them. I think it's going to be a lot of change coming in for the agency world. And I think a lot of this will be positive, and a lot of this will probably get us more back to the core of what agencies are, creativity and being smart and intelligent about things.
My guest this week is Dominic Heinrich, a visionary working at the intersection of design, AI technology, and human experience. As a co-founder of the Creative AI Academy and faculty member at the Pratt Institute, he's also the head of global design at the Coca-Cola Company. Dom really brings a unique perspective on how AI is shaping creativity and innovation. Dom's journey is also fascinating. From his early childhood in Germany, drawing maps that would manifest into his future agency network, to driving innovation at McCann and MRM in New York, to forming the Creative AI Academy, Dom's become one of the most respected and influential voices in AI and design. What I loved about this conversation was how Dom emphasized the importance of remaining curious, authentic, and most importantly, human in an increasingly AI-driven world. We covered everything from his early days as an entrepreneur and agency owner to his current mission of helping organizations and individuals navigate the transformation that AI is bringing to creativity and creative work. This is more than a discussion about technology. It's a deeper reflection on how we can all become better humans in an AI-enhanced future. Now, over to Dom. Dom, welcome to the Impossible Network.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Excited to be here.
So, shall we crack on?
We can crack on, yeah. Just one thing I need to tell you before we get started. Anything I say is basically my personal opinion, and I just need to make sure that we cover that a little bit.
So let's jump in with the first big question. Who are you, Dom, as a human being?
Ah, that's a good one, Mark. I wish...
Particularly in this world of AI, as we all evolve into machine brain interfaces.
I think there is probably a couple of people out there who think I'm an AI sometimes, because I think I can come across quite cold. The true story about being human is that you sometimes protect yourself. And so my coldness is just me being a little bit insecure sometimes.
Okay.
Like all of us, probably.
I know we always fall into our own little cultural stereotypes, me being Scottish, and people say, oh, you're from Scotland, you must be like this. Do you get that with being German?
Since you had Tony in the podcast, Tony would tell you that I'm overemphasized the German part. By saying it, and then he always refers to saying no, Dom, I don't think it's German, it's you. Yeah, I get it sometimes. I think I'm not very German anymore, and from my perspective, compared to probably some of my German fellows, but there are certain things that are very typical German, right? I think I dialed them down a little bit in 10 years living in the US. Not sure how this is for you.
Happens to all of us. Yeah, definitely. The second big question is, who or what made you the human that you are?
I would say challenges and mistakes, if I'm honest with you, Mark. I would say we go right, this is very German, going right in a deep conversation. Mm-hmm. I would say the tough things I experienced in my work life that made me who I am today. I think the mistakes I did, the people I worked with, the things I tried, right? It's like innovation is a lot about doing things that nobody has done before. So it's always a little bit of a harder challenge. And you learn along the way. And I think that's the beautiful part of life, that we constantly learning and constantly experiencing new things, and they make us better every day. I think one of the things that I'm really cautious about, and I think I learned from my mom, is being self-reflective and sometimes a little bit too tough on myself, my executive coach would say, Stala. But I think it's a part of it, right? It being sometimes unsatisfied with yourself in a healthy way and saying, okay, what can I do better? And that makes you hopefully ultimately better every day.
Interesting. When you start to talk about innovation and the intersection in innovation and creativity, it's got to be fueled by curiosity. So where did that curiosity come from? Was it innate or was it something that was nurtured?
I think that I've born that way, probably. I always was curious. Probably my parents would say nosy. Tony as well, Mark. I think I was always curious, but I also have an ability to, I think, in patterns, which is very unusual for creative people. I'm not a storyteller. That's, I think there's other people who do that in a better way. My brain and my creativity goes in patterns. And so I see things and they inspire me. And I have a colleague at Coca-Cola and she always says, your brain jumps in an incredible way. But when you explain it, it makes so much sense. And I think that's what a little bit of my, I see something and I have immediately making connections and connect the dots. And I think that kind of was always my way of living. And I did this as a child already and took Lego bricks and started cutting them and heating them up and kind of bent them so that I can form a Formula One car out of them. Because that at that time, that didn't exist at Lego. So I think it was always a little bit my own imagination and excitement about trying things out in a new way.
When you talk about imagination, an innovation, and you've got that sort of that imagination as a child. When you start to get interest in innovation, you talked about making mistakes. I know you had your own agency. When you set out, did you set out to focus on innovation, and made mistakes in those early years? And where was your imagination taking you at that point? Because you must have had a goal, a vision of you must have been imagining the grand future.
Actually, there's a map that I drew when I was maybe 10, where I built my company, my global company network. And what was interesting is I was at that time already thinking about science and experiences and technology and making an agency that is all connected. And that was in the 90s, right? Early 90s.
Wow.
And I didn't, at that point, I didn't realize it. It was just my imagination. And it's funny because I called the agency in the very early years, in the first 2 years, I called it Doei. So D-O-E-I. And it is basically set together out of Dominic and Heinrich, my first and last name. Mm-hmm. And I did it purposely because that was the drawing, 1991 or something.
Yeah.
And so to answer your question, I think when I was set out, I was like, wanted to build a global agency that works differently, that is driven by experiences. And that word didn't exist in the early 2000s when I started it, right? But the work we've done as an agency in that time was very experiential, very experience-driven, very digital meets physical. And it just felt super natural to me. And it felt like, wow, the world is digital and physical, this needs to go seamless. We're still not there yet, but that was driving me in a way, and that was always my ambition. But at that time, there wasn't, the big money wasn't made in that area, so we had to do a lot of traditional advertising work.
Just two things. One, as you're talking about the map, I interviewed Debbie Millman. I don't know if you know Debbie, who runs the School of the SVA School of Design, yeah. Branding.
Never met her, but
branding at SVA. Yeah,
the name obviously.
And Debbie. So, and Debbie has the Branding Matters podcast, but she, when I interviewed her, she talked about how when she was a kid, she used to draw, and she drew all these brand images of Lay's and of, I can't remember, there were two or three brands that she drew on a city street in New York. And she said they became the manifestation of her life, that when she started then becoming the brand designer for Lay's chips and then all the other amazing brands that she's worked on. But they were all in her drawing, which she did when she was age 9, similar to you.
Wow, fascinating.
And she's still got it. And she looks at it and goes, it was my future self that I was drawing in a city in New York on 6th Avenue. And these vans with all the brands logos on them.
I mean,
it's incredible.
I would love to see them because it's probably fascinating. I think a lot of creative people are driven by their imagination as kids. It's funny because if you ask me when I was probably 8 or so what I want to be, there was only 2 jobs. Race car driver wasn't good enough for that. And the second one was director of a bank. And I can't tell you why I thought that, because my whole life was very creative and everything I've done as a child was very creative. But I thought director of a bank would be a good job.
Wow. Well, thankfully, you didn't go down that route.
I studied finance at the end.
Well, you said you made some mistakes. Yeah. So there you go. That must be one of them.
Yeah. That was a big one.
Right.
Didn't go down well, I can tell you that.
Right. Well, let's, in the interest of time, crack on. So you entered advertising. You ended up in New York. What was the evolution to go from those early mistakes in Germany to ending up working for agencies in New York City?
I think it was always my dream to be in New York. So I tried to open my own agency here, which didn't work out. Too naive, too young. Then I sold my agency to a bigger organization that went bankrupt 2 years later under my watch. And so that was probably, I always call it my biggest and my best mistake ever, because it actually got me out of, in my very late 20s, early 30s, it got me out of this entrepreneurship, which I think I wasn't fitting in a way. Mm-hmm. And worked 2 years for a smaller agency in Germany. It's actually the first agency owned and opened by a woman in the 50s. And so I worked with them, got them into being the top 30, one of the top 30 agencies in Germany from a creative standpoint. And then McCann reached out, and my negotiations with McCann were purposefully thinking about, okay, if I take this job and I have to go to Frankfurt, which was for somebody born in Munich, Bavaria, it's kind of a big deal. No offense against everybody in Frankfurt. But yeah, moving from the mountains into a city that's probably more Americanized than any other city in Germany was a big deal at that time. And I did this on purpose to see if I can use McCann as a springboard to go to New York. And then luckily I was very fortunate enough that Rob Reilly was the one who had a conversation with me and was willing to give me a chance to come to New York. And Kate McNevin, who was at that time, I think, the chief operating officer of MRM McCann, they both were like, okay, let's make this work and get you over there. And that was just after 3 years being in Frankfurt at McCann.
Very cool. So you were an early advocate or using AI at the time. It was referred to as machine learning well before the Google team developed Transformers that led to the evolution of GPT-1 by OpenAI. What was it that led you to that realization that was an opportunity to explore creativity through the application of that technology?
I'm still processing what you just said, Mark. Never compared myself with Google and Transformers. I think my dad is an engineer by trade. Mm-hmm. And so for me, technology was always something very simple to access. So I think I always thought about how can we solve problems? So design mindset, how can we solve problems in the world, and how can technology help us to solve them? And one of the first projects I did, I think back in 2012 or 2013, the solution was very simple, as saying you apply machine learning to it and you can calculate things, and that leads to the solution. And so it wasn't something purposefully chosen. I wish I could say that, right? And I wish I could claim that, but it was just naturally the best way of doing things. I think we were with the team in Frankfurt, with Martin Biela, the chief creative officer, and Mark, my creative partner, the first ones who developed a before Amazon actually developed a system that allowed you to actually detect coughing and sneezing accurately. And that was 2013-14 when we built that. But the approach was not use machine learning. So the approach was, hey, can we detect that? Is it possible to build a system that allows you to detect that, analyze the data, understand the data? Very, very basic very naive maybe in the thinking as well. I wish I could tell you there was like this magic kind of sparkle.
But in a way, that is just the very nature of innovation, how you stumble across things. Because one of the questions I'm going to ask you was about how serendipity played a role in your journey. And that sounds very serendipitous, of you stumbling across that.
Yeah, maybe serendipity. I mean, I never saw it. I'm probably more of a planner than I appear. I have, it's a funny story about me, and I kind of reveal a little bit the truth, Mark. I sit somewhere, in a meeting, I hear something and my mind goes, well, we should be able to detect coughing and sneezing by using machines and machine learning. And my usual reaction in a meeting is, because I'm so ashamed of the thought, is I say, I've read somewhere that you can detect coughing and sneezing. Everybody's like, oh, wow, can you find this article? Mm. And then I have to go and it's like, ooh, cover up my lie in that way, right? But in 99% of the cases, I'm right. And I find something. Mm. And it was about a color-changing car. And I was like, there must be a way of making paint that is changing the color. Mm. And I actually found a professor at University of California who actually invented that just 2 years prior. So I think it's just my natural gift, my superpower maybe, that I'm having this kind of sixth sense or seventh sense or whatever you want to call it, that I wouldn't, maybe it's serendipity, but maybe it's also just having a good understanding that in this world, nothing is impossible if you want it.
Do you know the writer, journalist, Packy McCormack?
No, I don't.
Oh, you like this. So Packy has created a thing called the Science Fiction Database. And he's gone back through time and created a database. Essentially, it's a very big Excel chart, a spreadsheet, of all the science fiction novels written in through history and when inventions were first written about and when they became reality. And the ones that haven't yet become reality, of what, whether it be detecting sneezing or whatever. One of the great ones is, when was the first time a search engine was ever written about?
Probably 50, 60 years ago? That's not enough, probably.
1742 in Gulliver's Travels.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I know. But you like it. I'll send you a link to the database.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Please.
Yeah, it's highly entertaining. Good for innovation sessions, by the way.
yeah, definitely. I love it.
Right, third big question. Same question I asked Tony. What are you working to achieve before you shuffle off this mortal coil? Long way to go, of course.
What did Tony answer? Don't remember.
I can't remember if I go back. It opened up the conversation for the rest of the podcast around the work you're obviously doing around.
I have to listen
together.
So. I have to listen again. Well, I think in the last 2 years, I kind of got to a place where I'm really, really happy what I accomplished and achieved. And it took me. And actually, I'm kind of appreciating that moment in my life, because I feel like I was always hustling and trying to reach the next thing and to reach the next thing. And I'm in this phase at the moment, at least, where I feel very fortunate what I'm allowed to do, right? That I'm having this role at Coca-Cola, having be the co-founder of Creative AI Academy with Tony, teaching at Pratt, doing all these things I'm doing at the moment is perfect, right? It sounds busy, but it is really, I enjoy every moment I'm doing things. And so I think this is a little bit of a moment where I'm just being in the moment. And I think I don't want to look too much into what I want to accomplish in life.
What's the intersection between those three roles? I mean, you're head of global design at Coca-Cola. You're a partner and co-founder of the Creative AI Academy, and you're teaching at Pratt. All at the intersection where AI
and design
is touching people's life and design. Mm-hmm. What's the the glue between all three roles, a similarity, and what impact would you say you're having on the different audiences or people that you're engaging with?
I would say that if we start with the one that happens in the evenings, usually twice a week, which is Prat. I think Prat is just fantastic to meet talent and people who are just starting to discover what AI can do in design. And it is a great learning, right? It is something that inspires me and that I love to also share what I've learned and how I think about it. And I try to humanize it a lot because I feel like we're over-indexing on technology. And that brings me to my role at Coca-Cola. I think my job there is, how can we drive design consistency? How do we see this from a human perspective, right? And serving, I think, is it 8 billion servings a day as Coca-Cola? It's kind of crazy if you think about it. And so the question is, how can we use AI in a way that is intelligent, but also humanized, and make sure that the design is ethical and responsible. So, and it's really fun because I touch all things. I touch the things that go out in the world. I touch the things that help us driving design consistency at scale and working with large organizations like Adobe or OpenAI mm-hmm. or Microsoft. So I think this is just fantastic to have these interactions and have these possibilities. And then not making Tony too much jealous talking about the other things. Yeah. Creative AI is a little bit the baby that Tony and I founded. It's also kind of the, Tony is perfect in running the company. And I think my job and my role is being a little bit more out in the world, talking about it, setting a point of view on it, and working a lot with Tony on, hey, what's the products we are offering? What should we offer? We're doing just a switch of just prompt design to, hey, agents building, right? And agents becoming such a big topic and custom GPTs. And then the leadership part. The leadership part is where I'm very often then do the workshops myself with Tony, sometimes with Stella Sireno, who's part of it, where we really go in and talk with leaders and help them to be maybe not so much driven by the media coverage that talks about efficiencies. And I think that's interesting, right? Because we see three waves of technology always. And I think we are in this wave of more efficiency, reducing cost. That's the first wave everybody is
the
in.
The whole productivity.
Right,
yeah.
And productivity. And then everybody realizes in the second wave, ooh, that maybe that doesn't work that way. And maybe, yes, you gain, but the quality goes down if you don't pay attention to it. So that's then the second wave. And I think that the most interesting one will be the third wave when really new business models and transformations are happening. I can't wait to reach that point because I think that's going to be the most interesting one. And also, I think that will be the one where we all realize that AI is just an infrastructure like electricity is. And it is something that's around us, but it is not driving our conversations.
When you talk about design, consistency in design, how is that affecting or just your observation, what the ramification is going to be on creative agencies' work? I'm not just talking about Coca-Cola, I'm talking about brands generally. Because what you say, when you partner with likes of Adobe and the products they have in Firefly and they're rolling out all these, whether it's, you know, some organizations will work with Canva, others will have Firefly, others will be Midjourney. In turn, it'll be easy for many clients to be able to manage things consistently themselves. A lot of the things that agencies have done in the past have been the guardians of the brand. How do you think that's going to change? And how do you think agencies will need to evolve, both in terms of the services they offer and the business models around which are built? Because we know we're often based on outputs rather than outcomes, or inputs rather than outcomes and outputs.
Yeah. I think you need, for the business models, you should get Suzanne Powers in the podcast. You remember her, who was the chief strategy officer. We had a whole conversation about this topic, which is probably the most important one for the agency world, moving away from the FTE business, right? This is, and I think that's an interesting one because, there's a great slide. I think Board of Innovation showed that AI can do things and generate things in seconds, right? And minutes maybe, while people can do things in hours and days. Organizational change is happening over years, usually months, maybe, but usually years. So there's a big discrepancy on that whole topic. But to answer your question, I think the trap that we can all tap into is that everything is at the moment built on one, or not on one, but on a limited number of large language models. They kind of work in the same way. I call them all the generation yes, where we all in now, and it's not the generation Y, it's the generation yes saying, yes man, because these machines just want to, these models just want to please you, and they want to give you an answer. And if you train them on your brand identity, they will answer correctly on your brand identity, but they answer always in the same way. So no matter what brand you are, the underlying core idea will be the same if you're not pushing further enough. So I think if you ask me about the roles of creativity and creative agencies, I think that's becoming fundamentally more important than ever in the world of AI. We have a whole course at Pratt that is called the Human AI Relationship. And one of the things we're teaching about there is the whole notion of thinking methods and how to think differently. So we talk a lot about moving from design thinking to thinking design, right? And that notion of having different methods. So I think creativity and creative agencies, we will probably see more of them. And I actually could see more independent shops actually being super creative, while the bigger organizations are moving in a different model, in a different system. I think you see at the moment the big push in media. I think they're kind of going back a little bit to the old days and trying to figure this out. So I'm not in a place to have an opinion about this, even if I saw IPG from the inside, Omnicom from the inside. I think it's going to be, it's going to be a lot of change coming in for the agency world. And I think a lot of this will be positive, and a lot of this will probably get us more back to the core of what agencies are, creativity and being smart and intelligent about things.
I'm intrigued. I'm going to jump off a bit of a tangent, because you use that term thinking design, moving away from design thinking. Mm-hmm. Given that you are working with students at Pratt, but also probably observing through the workshops you're doing with leaders and clients through the AI Academy, and probably even people you're seeing within the Coca-Cola group, the need for people to, I'm calling it the AI mind shift, that we have to have this mind shift in the way we think about this technology to other technologies we've worked with in the past. How do you think, well, I suppose the question is, presumably critical thinking needs to be more baked into the way that we are doing our work, whether it be through students, through the education system, through the way that we're encouraging people to be more critical thinkers and to challenge convention in organizations, for regardless of their roles. Because as you say, AI, because of the nature of language models, will give you the sort of almost the answer you want. Are you seeing that as a challenge to get people? Because let's face it, the majority of people struggle sometimes with both creativity, tapping into the curiosity, and thinking beyond the way we're conditioned through our education system. Is that something you see as a challenge for organizations, a challenge for our educators?
Yes, definitely. I mean, just sharing my own observations and my very personal opinion on this is, I think we will see a fundamental shift in organizations on talent. And I think if you're good in following orders and do your job by the paper, by the books, then there is a role for people doing that in some areas, no doubt. But I think we will see in a lot of areas that people who are curious-minded, who are thinking out of the box, who have learned critical thinking, have learned to apply thinking methods in their work, and really skilled and really smart about their area of profession, will accelerate in a completely different way than before, and the others will fall behind. And I think it will be it will be really tough for people to keep up if you're not in a specific area you're really good at. But I think this also opens the opportunity to create new areas of jobs and new, probably businesses we haven't thought about, because these people, I think a lot of people have not found their right profession yet. And they kind of follow a profession they have because it makes money. But I think that that will open things in a different way. And to answer your question about education, I think on one part, because we get the prat from faculty a lot as a question, what should we teach? It's like, no, you need to keep teaching compositions and design and the craft of design. Mm-hmm. You need to do this because people need to understand it so they can judge and push the machines to create something that is better. And I think some of the things don't need to change. Other things like, do I really need to learn all history in history class, or do I need to understand why history happened and why things in history happened? So I think this is the shift we will see. It's more about the why and less about the what.
What? That's really interesting. That's fascinating. Two things. I went to an event last week at Reddit headquarters. It was on the future of marketing in a world of AI, and a really interesting panel. And the question they were asked is, what will the future mean? Will it be the generalists that survive, or will it be the specialists? And the panel was completely split. Mm. And one person said, it'll be a specialist in generalism. Now, I don't know what the answer is, but it's an interesting thing as you start to think about it in terms of the way you're talking about how people's roles will evolve. And I'm not necessarily looking for an answer. I just thought I'd put it out there, something maybe to sort of to ruminate on as you're over the next few months.
Yeah,
maybe we can follow up on that one later.
Yeah, we should. I think my immediate reaction to this is, and it's so funny, I think we're trying to put people in boxes. We love to do that. And I think we will experience that it is not that easy to put people in boxes anymore. So are you a specialist or a generalist? Maybe a bit of both, right?
Well, that's what this woman said, yeah.
So it's a great question, actually.
Well, let me ask you another one that's related. So this is, as you were talking, the other thought that came to mind. I wrote something back in 2017. It was a thing on, I think it was the Huffington Post, called The Future of Getting Lost. Mm-hmm. And my view was it was based on Darwin's thinking path when he used to go away and just think as he was walked. And that as technology makes everything speed up, this is obviously before AI, and does so much for you, the future of innovation comes from our imagination, unlocking our imagination. The way we unlock our imagination is to shut our brains off. Mm-hmm. And let our minds wander, our own mental thinking paths or whatever. And given that you had this vigorous imagination as a child, is that something you think we'll have to nurture in people, is to get them to almost step back from AI? Because at the same time, AI can do so much for us. And it's almost we must remove ourselves to unlock our imaginations, to think things that it will never be able to come up with.
Yeah, I mean, in general, that's probably a true statement. As I said before, we over-index on AI at the moment, and I think what we really should do is over-index on the human piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is if we talk about an agentic AI world, then we have probably agents around us. They shadow us and they do things for us. But we are thinking very linear as humans. So for us, if you talk to people in the marketing industry, they immediately think, oh, cool. Then I need to design the conversation between me and the agent. It's like, no, that's not what it is. The agent will know what you want and will make a decision on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the people look at me like, but I don't want this. Yeah, but it will be so valuable that you want that. And just watch how many people use ChatGPT and no questions asked about security and data privacy. And while companies bring it up rightfully, and I think it's an important topic to talk about, you can actually observe how quickly humans are actually doing things because it has a benefit to their life, a fundamental benefit to their work. And they're willingly to ignore some of the warning signs, right? And I think that fascinates me because we talk about the technology, but we should actually talk about the human behavior on that in that instance. Mm. And so for me, I think if you look in a world that is maybe all where AI is around us and makes decisions for us, the question is, how do we live in that world, right? And what we are doing. And there's my romantic perspective, is like, we have more of these conversations, Mark, and have time to do this, while emails coming in and will be replied to automatically and correctly. There will be probably no emails anymore. And I think we haven't really grasped where this is going, because we're thinking very linear as humans in general. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the linear thinking in a removed technology world will work, and not removed, but having it in the back end, and how this whole world of system thinking, I count myself more as a systems thinker, will actually evolve again. And for me, one of the big topics is going into space. I think that's going to be the next decade, which will be fundamentally driving humanity. Quantum computing certainly as well, if we get to that point soon enough. But the AI part will be a part of our life very, very naturally. And then I think the sooner we start, and the sooner brands start to think about this, what that means, the better it is.
So what's your advice, Wendy? You're dealing with people in Pratt who have probably got ambitions in design, creativity, design thinking, thinking design, systems thinking. And you're dealing with probably a lot of people in the creative domain in the work you do. What's your advice to them about how they should prepare for this fast approaching and very rapidly changing future?
I think one of the things we do as an exercise with everybody, and I think it's a good one, is we have a canvas we use. We have several canvases, but I think we have one for prompt design, where we say that we print this out usually in class and have people writing it down on a piece of paper or on a mirror board. And the reaction in any workshop we're giving is, well, I thought we talk about AI and we learn how to use ChatGPT. And it's like, yeah, you learn how to use ChatGPT. You learn the fundamental basics of communication and thinking. That because a ChatGPT course you can have online for $200 probably, or for free from anybody, and that will not get you anywhere, because if you don't learn how to communicate, if you don't learn how to think, you will not accomplish what you want to accomplish. I had a conversation with a friend yesterday who said, I don't think it can help me with strategic foresight. And I said, well, what kind of version do you use? GPT 3.5. Well, the problem is that the way you use it and you're trying to use it will not get you there. I agree, because it doesn't have the advanced reasoning. But if you go on one preview and you ask the right questions and have the right dialogue with it, then you probably will be surprised what it spits out, because it will be completely different. And I think that's if you use Llama, which is unmoderated, which has its dangers on its own, but if you use it, it's kind of impressive what these things can do and help you with. So if you learn how to think, if you learn how to communicate, you can get outputs I think humans cannot imagine yet. And I think that will change our world fundamentally, how we see it, how the businesses that will pop up. Same with the digital area, right? It's like it transformed everything we do. And Amazon wouldn't exist without this digital transformation and the internet. So you can only imagine what is probably coming next in the world of AI.
If we look at the imperative we have to evolve as human beings, to keep up with this technology, our education system, our kids have to be part of that. What's your hope or your view of how one of the slowest moving organizations on the planet, with the American education system, maybe the British one's behind it, but how are they going to deal with this rapidly changing world?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, everything I see in education at the moment happening is that there's a lot of curiosity and there's a lot of teachers who actually understanding that it has an implication on it. So I think the human nature is how to cheat, right? Or how to be faster about things, because that's how we since the Neanderthalers are being wired, because that's how our brain food system works. I need food to have energy, so our brain is wired to consume as, or to burn as less energy as possible in order to be to save it. So I think the question is, how do you actually in education foster that? I think there we will see things that are fundamentally change the job of a teacher, becoming a coach and having AI being a part of the teaching itself. So just imagine you have a class of 20, 30 people, kids. It's getting bigger and bigger. It's really hard to take care of them. So how do you help them? And I think AI will be fundamentally important in that, because it will have the same content that is being shared with the kids, but at the same time, it will ask them and help them learn in their speed, in the depth of knowledge they need, and they are capable of progressing through. And that allows teachers to go in and say, okay, this kid is really advanced. This kid needs help. I focus on this kid and I coach this kid, right? And suddenly, if a completely, I hear there's a school in Switzerland, in Luzern, I think, that has three teachers for each class. And they're rotating, and they can do that because they have a system that allows the kids to actually do everything they learn on the computer, and the teachers come in as coaches and then as mentors. And I think that's a really interesting system. And this is just one glimpse of an example how this AI infrastructure will probably change education for good.
Yeah. Also, the point you made about history, starting to ask why, not what. Because I can imagine if I've been given the conversation, I've had the conversation with my history teacher about why and not what happened at the Battle of Bannockburn between Scotland and England, or why did Henry VIII take the head off Anne Boleyn? It'd be a very different conversation to what happened. I think that will be fascinating to evolve. If we start to get our educators to make that simple pivot, that could be really interesting. Yeah. I'm conscious of time, so I want to get, before we get into personal questions, what do you think is going to happen? Or when do you think, first of all, when do you think we'll reach AGI and beyond it? What will happen then? How will it impact us?
Good. The first question is very simple to answer. I think I would not believe anything that you see and read at the moment online. Will it feel like AGI? Some would say it already does. Others would will probably say next year, in the next 2 years. None of these machines are artificial intelligent. That's a fact, right? It's like they are advanced algorithms. You make mathematical predictions based on what you're putting in. So the more you put in, the better is what is coming back. That will become better. It will have a memory function. I think ChatGPT has it already. I think Claude as well.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's understanding you, but it doesn't, right? And so the truth, as far as I understand it and know it, is that AGI is at least 10 years away, if not more. It probably will not be accomplished before we have, first of all, quantum computing, because we don't have simply the computing power to do it. And the transformer models will have a big end. They have limits. I think most of the people haven't understood that yet. This is not an endless infrastructure. That infrastructure will be limited, and it will be probably impossible to reach AGI on, true AGI. And then I think the last part of the bit is, which I think is really interesting and is forgotten about or not talked enough about, is these machines need constant data input. If they don't have it, they can't evolve and they will not evolve. So one way of doing it is synthetic data, but how do you build the synthetic data constantly? So I think there's a couple of things in between that have limitations. And again, I think this the question is not AGI. The question is, how do we use it in a way that is beneficial for us and makes our life maybe less technological in terms of talking about it and more human, is probably the big question, I think, where we should emphasize on. We're over-indexing again of AI, AGI. I think that's not the question to ask.
Let's table that and delay that answer till we maybe get you and Tony around a table to answer.
Oh, that's going to be fascinating.
What should we be using it?
Opposite opinions.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that one. We'll do it with a bit more time. Personal questions. Mm-hmm. What principles do you live by?
Authenticity. Hard word for German. Trying. That's my biggest principle. I try that every day. Doesn't mm-hmm. work. It's super hard. But I think it's the most important principle. I think the second one for me is being empathetic and human, right? And understand that the person in front of you has a reaction, not because the person doesn't like you or doesn't, they have all their own challenges. And so understanding them and emphasizing them in a positive way and being empathetic about it and understanding that your problems are not solely your problems. It's like everybody is in their own head, and so helping them getting out of their head. And being, one person once said to me, you're the AI guru. And my first reaction was like, yeah, I'm the AI guru. And then my second reaction was like, why did this person say that to me? And I realized that it can be intimidating if you have somebody in front of you with a big CV. But I don't see it that way, but this person doesn't know that, right? So my reaction, and I'm super proud of myself in that moment that I kind of reacted in that way and said that there's no such thing than a guru. I think we are all in the same boat and trying to figure things out, and turned out to be probably the best answer I ever gave, because we became really close collaborators and doing a lot of things, a lot of work together. And there's a lot of respect for each other, because everybody brings something to the table. And I think having more of this in the world would be, that's exactly my point about, let's talk less about AI, let's talk more about how to understand each other and accepting the fact that we're not the only ones who have problems with ourselves or challenges to overcome. The person in front of you has the same. And so how can you step forward and help the other person is sometimes more valuable and more helpful and more successful than anything else, having a billboard or a campaign coming out. Who cares at the end of the day?
Oh, good answer.
Thank you.
Who inspires you, or what inspires you?
As a kid, Ayrton Senna. I admired him for his precision and really, I think he was the best in driving the moments he was just, he said that once, he's like, I'm in the zone, I don't think, I just do. And I think that's a very inspiring thing that goes back to what I just said, is like being in the zone and just go with the flow.
And it's a great documentary.
It is fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all human, and we all have to deal with our uncertainty, our fears, our doubts. How do you manage those?
Sometimes crying. I have different techniques. I learned from Stala a technique that I use not often enough, but I can only share with everybody else. Works well for me, which is I write every night three things down I'm proud of myself. And I, Mark, I tell you, this is really hard. Because I'm very, very judgmental about myself. But if it's even the smallest thing and you write it down, it kind of creates a mindset of positivity and appreciation of yourself. I don't think you need to, it's always about yourself. It's more about how do you show up to others. And then fear is something you have because you're not proud of yourself, or you think admitting that you not know something or that makes you weak. And I think that's a little bit how society is wired. And there was probably two or three things today when I said to you, I don't know, or I have never heard of it, right? And that is what drives curiosity, because you shared so many new things today with me. And I was like, I will go away out of this meeting and of this podcast and say, wow, I learned so much from Mark. And so don't be fearful, be human and accept that we're all the same. We're all struggling with the same thing. There's a great book about the subtle art of giving a F.
Fuck yeah.
And oh yeah, we're among our Europeans, we can speak it out loud, right? And so, it's like, give a fuck. And I think one part in the book is like, if you think you're the only person who has this problem, you're pretty stupid, because then you haven't understood how the world works. And it's something along the lines which I really resonated with me in such a way where I was like, oh yeah, oh my God, yes, true. This person probably suffers the same things. And it's funny, because if you work with people, you don't see it. You think they're all so strong and they don't have it. But if you then end up going with some people to an award show in Vegas, mm-hmm. and you speak with them for the first time, really speak with them, you learn actually they have their own fears and their own challenges. And actually that makes you understand that it is sometimes a bad reaction you had in the past and you should have reacted differently. And I think that's for me the how I deal with fear. But I also have these moments where I wish I would like to sit under my desk and hide and maybe cry, but just hide. No, I'm so visible that I sometimes wish I would be invisible for a moment. But then that's just because I heard from one person one thing that they didn't like, and instead of accepting it and saying maybe I should change it, or accepting this person, it's not about you, it's about their own fear, right? And mm-hmm. you triggered something in them, is sometimes the thing to go about it. And then that helps me a lot personally on manage my fears.
A couple of more questions. Sure. What book would you like us to recommend?
Book AI 2041. It's a good one.
Ah, okay, yeah. Put that in the show notes.
Kai-Fu Lee. And Mark, this is perfect on topic. Like, we planned this. It's like Kai-Fu Lee made a book with Quinn Quifon, and one is a science fiction author and one is an AI expert. And they basically write about, in a science fictional way, what the future looks like. And then the other one basically explains what the technology will come to. So can only recommend this one.
Excellent. Okay, then. I said this to Tony. I haven't made the connection yet, but we're all about reciprocity. So if you're open, I'll be connecting you with a couple of people that I think there would be benefit from each of you knowing each other.
I'd love to. That's perfect. I think more networking, more human connections. Let's do that. Let's get less digital.
Exactly. And the final question is, who do I interview next?
Suzanne Powers. I had such a great conversation with her. I would go with her.
Okay. All right. Well, when this goes live, I always wait until the episode goes live and then ask the person to make the connection. So if you could do an email connection.
My pleasure.
And then we'll take it from there.
Wonderful. Yeah, happy to
Thank you very much. I could have spent a couple of hours talking to you and going deeper with this conversation, but maybe we'll have to do a follow-up.
Yeah, I'm glad we time-boxed it to an hour. I could have gone longer with you. I like talking about the topic. But I'm glad, because I looked at Tony's and I was like, dude, you spoke 2 hours with Mark.
I know.
So I think we give the listeners time, and otherwise just reach out to me and ask me questions. Everybody else, hit me up.
Yeah.
It's very simple, dominic@creative-ai.academy. So always send me an email. I'm always happy. I get so many spam emails already. It doesn't matter to share that email.
I'll put your details and social links in the show notes.
Absolutely.
So, but that's great. So I really appreciate your time, and and you've certainly given me food for thought.
You too, Mark. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay, that's all for now, folks. Now here's my ask of you. Please follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or whatever player you use. Also, please subscribe to our new Random Collisions newsletter. We really are working to build a global community of action takers, action engines of people that really care about the problems that need solving. Thank you very much, and see you next time.